Monster Movie Media presents. And welcome to episode 33 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. A podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. And coming up in this episode, do I have a treat for you? I have a conversation with a woman who was actually at the 1964 World's Fair. Take that in for a minute. In fact, this is so exciting and amazing. Let's just get right to it. Let's cut the chit chat and get right to it. So, without any further ado, let's begin. Alrighty, I'm here with Kat the Hobo. Hello, Kat.
Hello.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm pretty well this evening. Not quite as hot as it was last night, so I'm doing okay. How about you?
Oh, very well, yes. It's a little cooler. We got a random heat wave coming up, but it's cooled down. So I asked you to come on the show because you shared with me over Twitter and through email an incredible story. And you were actually went to the 1964-65 World's Fair and experienced the attractions, that the iconic Disney attractions that are now in the theme parks, you know, so many years later.
That's correct.
So,
I have the emotional scars to prove it.
So this was not a happy experience for you.
Well, I wouldn't say that. It's just that when you already had some goofy phobias that no one else does, you don't expect them to be brought forward at a fun amusement park.
You don't, but, you know at these days you kind of do. I feel like most amusement park attractions play off phobias.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, Disney kept everything so under wraps that they, you know, they could drew people in with mystery and suspense.
Sure.
And, you know, you didn't really know what you were going to see. You just knew by their advertising that it was going to be extraordinary and something new. So the anticipation was very high, and the adrenaline was very high when those curtains went up, because you really, really were going to see something that had never been seen before. You know, the atmosphere in the building was tense.
Sure. I'd imagine at that point, people probably thought that Disney could come up with anything. And, you know, this is before, it's all word of mouth. So, you know what happens with word of mouth? Things get exaggerated, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
All that. And at this point, had you been to Disneyland?
Oh, no. I was only 8 and a half, and we were dirt poor. This was a big deal to take the bus into New York and see the World's Fair.
Okay. So going in, you knew it was going to be something spectacular. You're 8 and a half years old.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first exhibit that you went to that was of the Disney exhibits?
of the Disney exhibits. I believe it was the Carousel of Progress.
Okay. So what did you how did you interpret that as an 8.5-year-old? What did you think of
Well,
that?
It actually started in the line because there was a Disney crew there the day that we were there, and they were looking for, you know, they were going to film the audience's reactions for a Disney project that was later going to be part of the Wonderful World of Color series that they used to have on Sunday nights.
Okay.
So they were there to film the reactions and pieces of the show back and forth, and they were looking for the typical representation of family, so they could put them down front. And my family was in line, and I was this little adorable girl in a little pinky blue dress, and I was with my parents and my grandparents, so we kind of stuck out like a sore thumb.
Okay.
And they said, you know what I'm saying? So they said, you know, can you, would you be willing to do this? It'll bring you right to the front of the line. You'll be the first seated in the front row. And, you know, to my family, who never been anywhere or done anything, this was a big deal.
Sure.
It's like we're being treated like Disney royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, we said yes. We didn't know what we were going into, and it was pretty exciting, and we'd been enticed. And I think they said they were going to buy us hamburgers and milkshakes after. So
that's all taken.
Yeah, we were
on.
We were on board that, right? So we were the first ones in the building that particular day on the first. I honestly don't know if it was like the first time it ran that day or not. But all I can say is we were the first in line, first seated for that particular showing on that particular day.
Wow. So you're right in the front, huh?
Front row, dead center. Yep. And the show started, and the curtains came up, and there were robots. There were lots and lots of robots.
So as 8 years old, you interpreted them as robots, like, right away. You didn't think they were real?
Oh, no. I knew the difference between human beings and robots. These were robots. I think it took me maybe a minute to realize that the dog Rover, who sits in the front of the exhibit, was not a real dog. That might have taken me a couple of seconds, but for some reason, because my phobia is mostly about humans, I didn't really have a problem with the dog. So I kept trying to reach out and touch the dog, because we were so close to the stage, being in the front row. And, you know, back in those days, they didn't worry about vandals or anything like that. So
The
stage was pretty close to the audience. And if you wanted to and leaned forward enough, you could maybe touch the rotating stage a little bit. Enough to get hurt,
but it
was close enough. I mean, they weren't worried about security and vandalism and all that back then. So, you know, it was different.
So what exactly is the phobia that you had, or that you have probably still, or that you had when you were 8?
That I have worse now, you mean? No, I don't like dolls. When I was a little kid, being a little girl, you know, everybody gave you dolls, and I was named Kathy. You know, Kat is my nickname, and back when I was very little, the Chatty Kathy doll came on the market.
Oh, okay.
And that was a doll that was, like, lifelike, and you pulled a string, and she said about 6 different phrases until her voice box died.
So is that, you know, is that what
battery
got to you? When her voice came really
low? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
pretty much, yeah. And that and the fact that I wasn't a doll kid. You know, I was stereotyped a little girl, so I always got dolls as gifts, but wasn't really into dolls.
Okay.
And, of course, once they started talking and moving and doing all that creepy, disturbing stuff, then I totally was not into them, because I always had bad experiences with them. I don't know if I played too hard with them or pulled the string too hard or whatever, but they went very quickly from "Do you want to play?" to "Woo woo 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 woo." So you know, I didn't particularly care for them. They, you know, they started out pretty in a box and ended up stuffed in the attic very fast.
All right, so you weren't really into dolls. Carousel of Progress starts, and you see human size robots as you're coming up. So, but how did you take in the show? Like, did you think it was, like, spectacular, or were you just...
Yes, absolutely. It was astonishing. No one had ever seen anything that realistic with such fluid movement and the dog barking and wagging its tail. I mean, the whole thing was just phenomenal. I think more people were paying attention to all that than they were the actual story that the Carousel of Progress was trying to tell, from how the family unit changed because of technical progress from the Victorian days up to the present time and how it would probably look in the future.
Right.
So I think, you know, it was a combination of wow.
Were people were people like out loud going, "Wow, I can't believe it," or was it like really quiet? What was the vibe like in the audience?
Oh, no, it wasn't quiet. It was not quiet. People were either gasping in amazement, or they were applauding as each scene ended and the next scene turned. They would applaud it, and, you know, some couple people would stand up and applaud.
Really? Wow.
And it was a very exciting, positive experience overall. I mean, even despite my phobia, I was highly impressed by it all. I didn't walk out of that exhibit, you know, needing oxygen or anything. I was fine. It was impressive.
Okay.
Had its disturbing moments, but it was impressive.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. I know there was...
Go ahead.
There was one moment that they changed later on when it finally ended up in the theme park that might be trivia interest. There's a scene in the original 1964 version at the World's Fair where the family as a unit, using all the new technology, blows a fuse and all the lights go off in the theater. The whole thing goes pitch dark and you hear the father say, "Oh, we blew a fuse, Mother." And then you hear a little tinkering around as if somebody went down in the basement and came back up, and then all the lights come back on. And I think the audience reaction to that was a little frightening because they didn't know if it was part of the show or what was going on, and
wow,
it was pretty scary. Well, it was scary for a couple of minutes to be in the pitch dark, and for me, for all those robots up on the stage, and I'm in the pitch dark all of a sudden. So didn't particularly care for that because in my mind I'm thinking, one of those suckers could lunge for me right now. And all I could think of, you know, now telling you is that Doctor Who episode with the Stone Angels, where if they turned their heads for a split second and then turned around again, those angel statues moved a little.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like that. I mean,
right.
by the second session, nobody, or the second segment, where they moved into the next progressive, futuristic world, nobody really knew what to expect after that because the first one got us with the lights going out. So, you know, everybody was a little bit tense by the second one, but it was all in good fun, and I think everyone realized that each little session was going to have some little thing to, you know, make you jump or,
right,
you know, be amazed. And then we got desensitized to that.
All right, so you were kind of expecting after a while.
Right, exactly.
I think the show they're filming for, I think it's called Disney Goes to the World's Fair as part of the Wonderful World of Color. I watched a little bit of that earlier to prepare for our conversation, and during the Carousel of Progress part, I didn't see any audience shots. Do you remember yourself being on TV for that?
Oh, no, not at all. I don't think I even saw the results of that filming. And for all I know, that, you know, once you get it back to the studio and do some editing, you know, if they did show the audience, perhaps they just didn't show us. And because I was sweating and shaking like an idiot, and they thought, we can't use any of this stuff. Who knows?
Alrighty, so what exhibit were you off to next?
Probably various ones as we made our way around the corner. Mm-hmm. We might have stopped off at a couple dinosaur exhibits because I loved dinosaurs, and they had a big, giant, supposedly life-size T-Rex there that you could go over and stand next to its foot and have your picture taken. And then they could get you for another, you know, $5 or whatever, sure, to sell you the picture. And then there was a giant Ferris wheel for the Goodyear, and it was a tire. And it, so you got on that, and you got to ride the giant Goodyear tire. And it was pretty high for its time. There wasn't any London Eye or giant Ferris wheels that, like there are suspension wired today.
Right.
This was just a, you know, your basic Ferris wheel, but in enormous proportions. So that was cool. And then I think from there we went right over to the other one, the other Disney exhibit, to get in line, because you got a program when you walked in the door, and everything told you what time various exhibits were on. So you just knew when to go over and get in line for the next one. And I think that's what we did. We just went over to get line for the Lincoln.
So, great moments, Mr. Lincoln. So, were you still chosen to be in the front?
No, it was just for that Carousel of Progress, I believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, my memory's a little fuzzy, but I think it was just that first one. But now that you mentioned it, it must have been both of them, because we hadn't had our hamburgers and milkshakes yet. So they promised us for you know, going along with their game. So yeah, now that you're racking my memory, I think that's we were still part of their show.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right. So talk to me about going to see Great Moments of Mr. Lincoln.
Well, we ended up right down in the front again, which this time I really did not want to be. And that show started with a movie on the Civil War and talked about Abraham Lincoln, and then that's when the actual show started. And I just remember it being even creepy before it started, because they had like this big pink velvet, very heavy, almost like when you go to the old theaters, when they used to have the big curtains that opened before the screen was present in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like that, just big heavy pink fringed curtain, and I thought, that's an odd color for something that's going to be about a president, but you know, whatever.
Right.
And the curtain opened and they introduced Abraham Lincoln, and he just started speaking from a chair, which was, like I said, this was many years ago, but I want to say 8 feet away from my knees, sitting in the chair.
Wow, so right there.
Right there. And I remember he took a handkerchief out of his pocket while he was speaking. He wiped his brow. I mean, he just acted like a normal person would act. I think he itched his nose at one point. It wasn't that it was so fluid and realistic, but his movements and things that he did while he spoke are just normal things that anyone would do.
Right, mannerisms.
And that's what
mannerisms.
So, yeah, mannerisms, exactly. And that's what made it so creepy, lifelike. You know, because sitting that close to it, you could obviously tell it was plastic skin. And you know, you could almost even hear the whirring and clicking when he turned his head and all that. But the fact that he would do things that were just so small and insignificant, you know, like they mm-hmm. thought to program in, he would wipe his brow or itch his beard or whatever he would do while he was talking, was just so normal and human that I think that was a combination of knowing it wasn't real and yet it acted so real.
Mm.
That made it kind of creepy, disturbing. but also at the same time, just amazing, you know, amazing feat of technology that Disney had going for it. You knew it was going to be a success in the theme park. And, you know, we didn't know at the time when we were sitting there watching it that eventually it was going to be the Hall of Presidents and every president ever
right.
was going to be represented in there and that they would continue going to, you know, to this day. And I used to make jokes years later that, you know, I better never meet a politician and marry him because if he becomes president, I'm going to know that somewhere out in the world they're making a robot of my husband.
Yeah, don't get involved with politicians. You don't want a robot.
No, right.
Or your spouse.
Right.
you weren't really reacting too well to this as he started going. It was kind of creeping you out.
I was amazed, but I was, you know, kind of creeped out a little bit. And then about a third of the way through, he got up out of the chair and stood up. Perfect balance, you know. That just freaked out the audience completely.
Mm-hmm.
Freaked us out. No one knew he was going to stand up. No one. And the fact that that was my realization, that he wasn't attached to the chair in any way, how the hell was he working? Was he freeform? You know, I mean, nobody had heard of remote control back then. So he had to be attached to something, and that's when I started looking much closer, and because I was sitting down front, I had a better advantage than most, and I could see where he was connected and that it ran down under the stage. And then I think from there, that's when my brain snapped, because I was thinking more about what was going on below the stage than paying attention to his speech about, you know, equality and all the things I should have been paying attention to, because that's what was the point of the whole show. But I was just completely focused on how is this happening.
Wow.
But it was an amazing show. And like I said, he got up, he started, you know, to talk standing up, and it was intense. Everybody was just amazed until He started, like, his neck started to slow down.
Hmm.
And then his voice box started to go. And, you know, like Hal in 2001, A Space Odyssey, Dave, you know, he just started to go. And then he just started to, As if his back had been snapped at the waist, but in slow motion, he just bent backwards and just started to go down.
Oh, my God.
And then I mean, it's out on YouTube. It says, I think it's called Lincoln Fail or something. And then his knees started to buckle, and he just collapsed on himself and folded right up. And, of course, I was about, oh, this, I'm telling you, you can't make this stuff up. And I was right in the front row, so when he started to lunge forward, all I could think of at that age was, his head's going to snap off and end up in my lap. and I started to lose it big time. I mean, I had my mother's hand so tight, I think she lost feeling up to the elbow. and then they just shut it all down and got everybody out of there, because by then I wasn't the only one, you know, freaking out. Everybody was freaking out.
Really?
And they just got everybody out of there. And nobody wanted to go back in, not that they could have fixed him anyway. So I don't know what happened after that. To be honest, James, I never found out. I don't know if the show never went back on again and we were the last group that ever saw it at the World's Fair or what. I never found out beyond that day.
Do you remember what date it was?
It was not specifically. It was before my birthday, which my birthday was in July of 64, and I was still 8 and a half, not quite 9, so it had to be before July in 1964.
Okay, I'm going to look
into
that.
That's the best I can narrow it down for you.
So May or June, possibly?
Oh, no, it was in July.
It was in July.
A week before. This might have been a present for my birthday from my family. I really don't remember, but, you know, it was just shortly before my birthday in July. So I was still 8 and a half, not quite 9.
I'm trying to look that up to see exactly when it started. So now it opened in April of 1964.
Okay, and we were there in July.
So, yeah, it definitely went on beyond that. It was just, they might have been down for the day, though. So.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they must have had a backup, because there's no way they could have fixed that thing to work. Certainly at least the rest of that day. But I would seriously doubt it was repaired by the next day either, so. They must have had a fly-in, a backup. Abe, number two, off the assembly line.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know all that information off the top of my head, but I'm sure that they didn't just have just one. So,
I wish we didn't just have that conversation.
So I know it's bringing up some bad memories, but we got to keep the bad memories coming along.
Oh, good.
Well, before we leave World's Fair, I also want to know: did you go on It's a Small World or the Ford Magic Skyway?
Yes, and yes.
So what was your thoughts on those?
It's a Small World was kind of childish, even though I was 8 and a half.
Really thought that at 8 and a half, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that, well, you know, I was an only child raised by four adults, my grandparents and my parents, so, you know, my perspective of 8 and a half was probably a little bit more mature than the average 8 and a half year old. But I was kind of like a little mini adult at that age. But, I do remember It's a Small World, and the song got on my nerves in no time.
Wow, you really thought that at 8. So how did you take to the dolls, since you had such a phobia of dolls?
Well, they weren't that. Those dolls were not realistic. They looked like toys.
Right.
So I was okay there. You know, they didn't look like human children. They looked like toys that walked and talked that you'd see in any department store. So, you know, I got through that okay.
All right. And what was your thoughts on the
phone? We were in a boat.
We were in a boat. It wasn't close enough. Right. You had distance.
Right. Yeah. Water. I knew if they tried to get me over water, I was going to just be the winner of that one. So.
Yeah, water and robots don't mix.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't concerned. And there were no flying dolls, so I figured I was pretty safe.
Very good.
But, yeah, we went to that, and then we went to that. I forgot what you called it, but it was the
Ford's
one
Magic
where you
Skyway.
Sat in a car. Yeah, is that the one where you sat in a car and looked it up, down on all the different, you know, how it's going to look someday, projecting into the future of how, you know, people were going to be in pods, flying around like the Jetsons and underwater, living in domes and things like that.
I mean, I had a little bit of that. Went by dinosaurs as well, actually. I thought of that because you said you were a big dinosaur fan.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. It started out in the dinosaur age with dinosaurs roaring at you as you went by, or making it look like they were going to come out and eat you as you went by. Again, I don't have a problem with anything beyond human. I'm okay with animals. I'm okay with dinosaurs. You know, I'm okay with all those other kinds of robots. I'm just not big on the people. But, yeah, I really enjoyed that. That was cool. Seeing, you know, thinking, oh, man, people are going to live under a dome someday and underwater with a whole town. And that looked pretty good. And then, you know, the dinosaurs were amazing. It was all good.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Any last thoughts about the World's Fair before we jump to the next part of your story?
Well, I'm just kind of sad that most of it never really came to be. We're still waiting for it.
Yeah, we're still waiting.
You know,
for domes.
You know, we still don't have our flying cars. But the only thing that I guess really came to be was, you know, you could talk on your computer and look into a camera and see the people that you're talking to on the other side.
Yeah, we just got that recently. But, so.
You know.
All right, so second part of your story, it picks up in 1980 when you went to Walt Disney World.
Face my fear, I said.
Mm-hmm.
Face my fear. Get it over with. You'll never have nightmares again. You can do this, I said. I lied. I got in the Hall of Presidents. I made sure I got right down front.
Wow.
And those curtains, they still have, I don't know if they do now, but when I went back to face my fear, they still had that pink velvet curtain. What the hell? Pink velvet curtain. Shouldn't it be red, white, and blue? You're in the Hall of Presidents. But anyway, I digress. And so the curtains opened up after a brief movie about the history and so on and so on. The curtains opened up, and there they were, all the presidents, right up to the current one. And who was that, Kennedy, I think, back then?
80? I would say it was probably Reagan.
Oh, no, I was thinking of 64. I'm not that stupid. Yeah. Yeah, well, whoever was the president in 1980, Reagan, I guess. And, yeah, so there they all were. And they were all introduced. Everyone was an actual working robot because as they introduced everyone, they all nodded and blinked and did some little hand gesture or whatever. So, you know, as if to say, yeah, these aren't just props, mannequins around, you know, Lincoln. This is the real deal. Every one of these is one of these audio animatronics.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lincoln did his thing. I prepared myself because I knew he was going to stand up and not walk off the stage because he's connected to the floor. But what can I tell you? It just came back.
Really?
It all just came back in an instant, and I could not stay there. And I thought, well, I'm not going to cause a scene. I'm an adult. I'm, you know, quietly get up with my head down and go over to the exit and ask the usher to please let me out because it's too intense for me, and that'll be the end of it. No one will notice. No one will see it. And so that's what I attempted to do. And the usher said, oh, we can't let you out. I mean, everything is programmed, and the doors aren't going to open till the show's over. And I think he saw the maniacal look on my face and realized this kid's going to blow a gasket. We got to get her out of here. So he talked on some little walkie-talkie thing that he had in his pocket. And next thing I knew, and to my embarrassment, because I really didn't want to ruin the experience for anyone else who waited in a long, hot line to get in there, felt terrible about it. And had I known that ahead, I would have stuck it out, just kept my head down and, you know, just tried to get through it. I certainly would not have done that had I known ahead that they were going to have to shut the whole ride down just to let me out. Because I'm not that kind of person. But that's what they did. And before I could say, no, don't do that, that's what they did. And, of course, that just made it 100 times worse because all the presidents shut down. And, you know, and everybody moaned and groaned, and I felt awful about it. And but then I don't remember anything after that.
What did their voices do the same thing with the slow down record?
Well, Lincoln did. He was the only one that was talking.
Oh, okay.
But not for long. It wasn't like it was broken like the first time at the World's Fair. It was kind of instantaneous. Like it just cut short. You know, like somebody threw a switch and turned it all off. So it wasn't like a breakdown malfunction kind of thing. But it must have passed out. That's all I can remember.
Really?
Or it's all I have in my memory. Because the next thing I knew, I was lying on a bench right outside Cinderella's castle. And I could hear people's voices mulling around. And then I started to open my eyes, and there was a big, giant skunk leaning over me saying, in a man's voice, "Are you okay?" And you know, my internal voice is going, "What?" And then I realized, oh, I'm in Disney World, and this is one of those characters that walks around the park and has his picture taken with kids that isn't supposed to be talking.
Right. Yeah, not supposed to be talking.
Rules. So if I got a giant skunk standing over me and a man's voice asking me if I'm all right, this probably isn't a good sign that I'm all right. So I looked up at him, and I just said, well, if I'm talking to a giant skunk, probably not. And everyone around that was standing there just started laughing, which, of course, made me feel better because I made everybody laugh and took the embarrassment off myself. And then the skunk said, oh, that's good. And he walked away. And then it dawned on me as I was starting to come back to life that the skunk was actually Flower from the movie Bambi,
mm-hmm.
the little skunk. And probably he was more used to talking in the little skunk voice. And, of course, when when whatever happened happened, and he came over, they must have sent him over to, you know, make sure she sees a friendly face when she comes to or whatever, something that isn't intimidating. And so that worked, you know, wake up to a big giant furry and think you're in kind of, went from Disney World to some sort of convention.
Yeah, furry convention. Yeah, I don't know how comforting
yeah.
that is.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to come out and say that because I didn't know if it was a family program, but.
It's yeah, family-ish
kind of,
program.
Kind of what I was thinking.
It's family enough, but it's like The Simpsons, you know, like some jokes go over people's head, or some jokes go over the kids' heads, but it's still clean enough to get by.
Yeah.
So no problem.
Okay. Not that I would know from personal experience, mind you.
Of course, of course. Wow, so that was that. You tried. Did you go back on Carousel of Progress when you on that trip?
I believe I did. I was still determined to touch the dog. So, yeah, I did go back on it. And I messed up in there, too, but at least I didn't mess up anybody around me. But I got down front and successfully got into a seat that was directly in front of where I knew from past experience, that's right where the little dog lays and wags his tail. So I got down front, and the show started, and I was okay. Excuse me. And the little dog's wagging his tail, and I was determined that I could reach out far enough and I could touch his paw. And unfortunately, it wasn't like it was in the 60s. There was more distance between the audience and the stage with a column that went around so that, you know, it was impossible for anyone in the audience to touch anything going on the stage. So, to my disappointment, I still wasn't able to reach the dog, but I was at least still sitting right dead center in front of him when he wagged his tail and barked. So that was cool. And the last segment of the Carousel of Progress is the most recent up-to-date segment, mm-hmm. and they had changed the set when the carousel came around and that last segment comes up. The dog had been moved further down into the kitchen area, and where the set stopped right in front of me, Grandma was sitting on a footstool right in front of me. So where I expected to see the dog's face when the lights came up, I got an upskirt of Grandma in her nightgown. And the first thing that you realize from that angle is that they only finish the parts that people see.
Oh, so it was all unfinished underneath there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, most people have their reasons for being traumatized if they see up grandma's skirt. I had a whole new bundle of reasons.
Wow. Wow, those are some incredible stories. So, why did you end up going to Walt Disney World at that point? If you obviously you weren't eager to go and deal with these attractions from your youth, what brought you there?
Well, who doesn't want to go to Disney World? Well, I mean, I had an opportunity to go, and I took it.
Oh, so you did. You did want to be there. So you, even though you were scared of things that were there.
Oh yeah, I mean the Haunted Mansion. I wanted to see everything. I was always a fan of that Wonderful World of Color show, and they were always bringing you updates on what was new in Disney World. And I thought, man, someday I want to see all this stuff, because I was always fascinated with behind the scenes prop building and things like that. I had done a lot of theater work, you know, and I liked how things worked behind the scenes. So I had seen a lot of the shows on the making of during segments on Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color. And they had done a particular one on the Haunted Mansion and how they made it look like a ballroom of ghosts, and how when you got in front of a mirror, they made it look like there was a ghost sitting between you and whomever you were sharing your pod with, or chair with, or whatever. Dune buggy, okay. So, yeah, I mean, I wanted to go to see all this stuff, all this amazing technology firsthand, and plus, you know, just see the whole park, go on the rides and eat the food, you know, the whole thing.
Oh, great.
Stay in one of those hotels, ride the monorail. What's not to want to do?
You don't have to convince me.
Yeah, I mean, I think we stayed at the Polynesian Village.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, there was a luau going on every night. There was a heated pool with a waterfall. That's stuff you just don't see back here where I live. So, yeah, I mean, it was fascinating. Everything down to the trash barrels along the street blended into whatever you were in. You know, it was just amazing the way their minds worked.
Do you have any other attraction memories from that trip?
I really liked that. Things that most people think are corny now, I thought that Tiki Bird thing was really cool.
Oh, yeah, they're
changing. You know, where they all parrot the bird, yeah. And you know, when I went, there wasn't Epcot yet.
Right,
so
it's 3 years old.
That wasn't there. And it was just the Magic Kingdom, basically.
So when are you going to go back?
If I hit the lottery, maybe.
Well, yeah, it's a lot more expensive than in 1980.
Well, that flying and the hotel and the food, and add it all up, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you do want
to go
back.
Plus, I'm much older now. I would if I could, but, you know, I'm much older now. Walking around at my age now is not going to be as easy in the heat as it was when I was in my 20s or as a child. So, you know, sure. I don't know. If I was a grandmother and, you know, a whole family was going, I would certainly go. But as an adult at my age, to try to find anybody to go with, I don't think I would get anybody. But, you know, if I had an opportunity, I'd give it a shot. I wouldn't say no. Let's put it that way.
All right. Would you go back to the Hall of Presidents?
No. No, I would not go back to the Hall of Presidents. I could possibly, maybe with a couple of sedatives, a couple of really strong sedatives, I would go into the Pirates of the Caribbean so I could see the updates with Johnny Depp, you know, since the movies came out. But, you know, again, heavy sedation, perhaps, a couple of margaritas, a few beers, maybe I'd go in there.
Wow.
But otherwise,
Alrighty. If people want to find you, you're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter as Hobo Robot. Ironic, I know, but has nothing
yes.
to do with. No, seriously, it has nothing to do with my phobia that I called myself that. has to do with the Craig Ferguson show, and he calls his fans hobos, and then he decided that all his fans were going to be in this robot skeleton army, and we were going to live in a hollow volcano, and he just took the fantasy forward till all his fans actually created this fake universe on social media. We call ourselves the Robot Skeleton Army. So when I got on Twitter, I just called myself Hobo Robot and just stuck.
Oh. It works.
It works.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your personal traumatic stories. We weren't trying to bring up old demons, but I know listeners really appreciate hearing this firsthand account of being at the World's Fair and hearing a firsthand account of what it was like to experience these for the first time. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing these stories.
Well, I'm really thrilled that you thought it interesting enough that people would want to hear it. So I thank you for inviting me on.
Boy, let me tell you, when I started this podcast back in December of 2013, hasn't even been a full year. I never imagined that I would have someone on the show that was actually at the 1964 World's Fair. I mean, we've heard those history stories about it. Some of us have. We've heard many people talk about it. We've even heard some accounts of Imagineers talking about it. But I have never heard anywhere a first-hand account of somebody that was in the audience, let alone witnessing what she witnessed. Just mind-blowingly amazing. I'm so happy. I can't even get the right adjective. I don't know. This podcast is just pure magic. It is so many amazing things have happened since I started this show. I've met so many amazing people. I've had some pretty amazing experiences on and off the show due to the show existing. But this is pretty high up there. So thank you once again to Kat for coming on. If you would like to follow her on Twitter, do so. Our Twitter handle is Hobo Robot, HOBOROBOT. And if you listened to the last episode, you are aware of what I'm about to tell you. If you didn't, you're gonna be aware because you're gonna hear me say it. It's that coming up in October will be the 31 creepy days of Halloween. That's right, a Creepy Kingdom episode every day, counting down to Halloween. I know, right? It's pretty crazy. I will say it's not just going to be me. So you don't have to listen to me every day, but there's a lot of things in the works. Some people have signed on already as we speak. The gears are turning. Things are happening. Creepy days are coming. That's about all I can say about it right now. Just wanted to make sure everyone is geared up, being ready. We do have an official hashtag, which of course is hashtag creepy days. Hopefully nothing really horrible comes up under that hashtag. But we're going to take it over if it does. So get ready for that. And if you really can't get enough of me rambling on, you can check out my podcast, The Even James Has a Podcast. Where I talk about a whole bunch of stuff that's a little crazy. Lots of crazy stuff. Anyways, you can find the show at The Even James Has a Podcast.com. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pictures, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest. All you gotta do is go to Creepy Kingdom. Duh. And we are in the iTunes store, a place where you can rate the show, you can review the show, and you can subscribe. All of your favorite things to do to the show are right there. So go for it. And we're on the Stitcher app, where you can stream podcasts directly to your smart telephone or tablet. No downloading required. Check them out at Stitcher.com. Well, until next time.
Keep it clear. I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha